Bible together. I'm going to read from Mark chapter 6 and verse 30 to 44. This morning I was thinking about God's dynamite, the gospel, and even though the gospel appears as though it is nonsense, an implausible message, it is God's power for salvation. So we must be faithful in proclaiming the gospel, not just on a Sunday from the front, but all of us must speak fearlessly about Jesus, about the man Jesus and his death and resurrection. So what I want to do this evening is to think about the compassion we need for people if we're going to do that. One of the problems is that gospel people can sometimes be quite hard people. They can very proudly say that I'm a gospel man and you won't get me compromising on the gospel, brother. And that can sometimes come across as quite harsh. The passage we read about today is Jesus being full of compassion. And without compassion, however convinced we are about the power of the gospel and however determined we are to preach the gospel, if we don't do it with gentleness and compassion, then that gospel can put people off in the way that it's proclaimed. So let's read Mark 6 and verse 30. The apostles, I always think, just a little bit of an explanation here, we read a lot about the disciples. We read about Jesus' disciples in Mark. Now, disciples were learners. They were followers of Jesus. Apostles were delegates. And so Jesus had just sent them out as delegates, as representatives. And I'll explain that to you in just a minute. The apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest a while." For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in the boat to a desolate place by themselves. Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When he went ashore, he saw the crowd and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place and the hour is now late. Send them away to go into the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" And he said to them, "How many loaves do you have? Go and see." And when they had found it, they said, 5 and 2 fish. Then he commanded all to sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups by hundreds and by fifties, and taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to his disciples to set before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish. And those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. Years ago, when I first started in farming, there was a young lad who lived just up the road. And he was keen to come when I was looking after the pigs on a Saturday morning. And I would see him coming and I would hide up. And I would flick the lights off because he was a pain. And I didn't want him there. There was another incident when we'd moved, and there was a man called Hemglass man. He came selling frozen goods. And he was the kind of person you always felt you had to buy something off. And when we heard his chimes, because his van would chime as he came down the road, we would say to the children, right, you keep quiet and you don't answer the door. Not very nice, was it? It's a little bit like when you've got one of these phones and it shows you the number coming up. I have to confess, sometimes I don't answer the phone because I recognise the number. It's very naughty of me, but I'm sure that if you've got one of the phones, you do exactly the same. John is nodding. You don't. No, John doesn't do that. Always answer the phone. Conscience sometimes tells us to give time for people. But we can think of a whole lot of reasons why we shouldn't. We're busy with a whole host of other things, and we really don't want to give them time. This morning, the verse I quoted from Jude 23 is, Jude spoke about snatching them from the fire. And as I've already said, we spoke about how Paul did that in simplicity and godly sincerity. In other words, he just preached Christ and him crucified. He preached the gospel. But this evening, as I said, I want us to think about the frame of mind in which we do that. The way we look at those who make a demand on our time. I've just started a Christianity Explored group with a family. And it means on a Wednesday night, I have to go down and sit with that family. And sometimes I don't want to do that. But to have, if I have true compassion for those people, then I'd be willing to go and do that. Let's just set the scene, first of all, for this. Previous to this, Jesus had heard that John the Baptist had been beheaded. Now, I'm sure that that brought a lot of sadness to Jesus. From what I can understand from this, he'd got this news whilst the apostles, his delegates, had been out, as Jesus had sent them out, and they'd been casting out demons and healing the sick, and they'd been on a short-term mission, and they'd been out serving the Lord. They'd come back and heard this news, and they were whacked out. They were tired out. Because not only had they been out, but now that they were back, people were just flocking, great crowds of people. And the Bible tells us, this passage tells us, that they didn't even have time to eat. There were so many people putting a claim on their time. They needed a rest. That was the setting. And then we have the crowd. The crowd clearly either didn't see or they didn't respect that Jesus and his disciples needed time out, because they just simply kept coming. And actually, the reason why they came wasn't always the right reason. We know that from John 6, because a whole crowd of people were following, coming after Jesus, and Jesus said, you're coming after me because I fed you. They were coming to him because they wanted to be fed. They were coming to him because they wanted to be healed, because they've got family, friends who wanted to be healed. They came to him really for selfish reasons. And you can understand the disciples not wanting to give them time. But also, this crowd were reckless. Because whilst they saw Jesus and his disciples going across the lake, they followed him, and as they were going, they must have realized that they were going a long way from anywhere where they could buy food. They didn't make any provision for themselves. No packed lunch, nothing like that. They knew that they wouldn't be able to buy anything because, as we read in the passage, they were going to a desolate place. So really, this crowd, you can't credit them with a lot of concern, with a lot of care, with a lot of sense. They really haven't thought the thing through. And so we come to the disciples' response. In verses 35 and 36, he says, "Send them away." And it seems like an appropriate suggestion in the light of the reason they were there. They could see Jesus was upset, was sad about the news of John the Baptist. And they themselves, though they'd come back from their short-term mission trip, running on adrenaline and so excited after that adrenaline rush and that excitement, they'd hit rock bottom. They were tired out. And Jesus had said to them, "Let's go to a desolate place." And so you can understand the disciples, just send them away. But then Jesus' response is quite remarkable in the light of all of that. And he had compassion on them because he saw them like sheep without a shepherd. Isn't that wonderful? All of that build up, the setting, the tiredness, the sadness, the people, the crowd who were insensitive and didn't respect their need for a rest. All of that, the disciples wanting them to go away. And we come to Jesus. He had compassion on them. You see, he saw beyond their apparent selfishness. He saw them as a people who were just like sheep without a shepherd, utterly unable to help themselves. You see, Jesus knew what the shepherds of the people had been like. In fact, he said to them at one point that they were blind guides. The religious leaders, the Pharisees, the scribes and so on, they were determined that they were the legitimate leaders of the people, the spiritual authorities. They expected the people to listen to them and to do what they said. But actually Jesus said, "You're just blind guides leading the blind. And the people that you're meant to be leading are just simply sheep without a shepherd. They're utterly lost." And Jesus' response, first of all, he taught them many things. He knew what their great need was a spiritual need. And so he taught them, but he also took care of their physical need. He also fed them. And here we have the challenge to the disciples. The disciples had come here expecting to chill out. We already hear what the disciples said. Well, send them away. What does Jesus say to them? "You give them something to eat." And the disciples' response in verse 37 is perfectly understandable. I think there's a bit of sarcasm there. "Do you expect us to spend 200 denarii on feeding these people? I don't guess they even had 200 denarii with them. It would have taken a lot of money to feed 5,000 men, plus all any children and women who are with them. This was a vast crowd." The disciples say, "Come on, Jesus, be realistic. How can we really feed all of these people?" You know, they needed to learn a lesson that they should have learned already by now. In chapter 4 and verse 40, they were out on a boat with Jesus, and Jesus was asleep in the stern. You remember the story, and a storm came and the waves were crashing over the boat, and the disciples were afraid they were going to die, and they went to Jesus and they woke Jesus up and said, aren't you concerned that we're going to die? And Jesus said, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And you remember what he did? He spoke just a word, and the wind stopped and the waves calmed. The sea was calm. Just at Jesus' words. There was another lesson for the disciples later in chapter 5. You remember the Jairus' daughter, the synagogue ruler? You remember that he came to Jesus and said, "My daughter is dying. And you remember as Jesus was on his way, great crowd of people, as there must have always been, and a woman who'd been bleeding for lots of years came and just touched the hem of his garment because she thought, if I just touch him, I'll be healed. And of course she was. You remember Jesus stopped amongst all that kerfuffle and said, who touched me? And all this time, the clock was ticking and Jairus was thinking to himself, my daughter needs you, my daughter needs you. Until eventually the horrific news came to him and they said, Jairus, don't bother the master. She's dead. Your daughter is dead. You remember Jesus' words to him? Do not fear, only believe. And here were the disciples who'd spent so much time with Jesus and they needed to learn that lesson. Here they were faced again with a great need. And they said, Jesus, it can't be done. Send them away. We need a rest. Jesus says, you give them something to eat. And then they stand back and watch what Jesus did. He proceeded to feed them in a miraculous way all over again. What do we learn from this story? Well, the first one is this. Jesus knows sometimes we need to rest. He said to his disciples, come on, we need a break. I know that break didn't last long. They did get their rest later on. It's so easy in a busy society where we always feel we need to be doing to forget that Jesus wants us to spend time with him, to rest. How is your time with Jesus? Do you spend time alone with him? What about your Bible reading? What does it amount to? Some great notes now. You can get them on apps. You can get them in all kinds of ways. Now, very often they'll focus on a few verses. When did you sit down and get the Bible open and read a whole passage, even out loud, and ask Jesus as you do so to reveal himself to you? So important to take time out to rest. And there's no better rest than time spent with Jesus. The second application is an obvious one from this passage, and that is we're prone to selfishness. I was governor in the school. I was chairman of governors for several years, in fact. And I used to see the teachers and the head teacher, the pressure that parents put them under. And their little darling child wasn't doing quite as well as expected. And it was the teacher's fault. And when it came to parents' evening, I knew that those teachers were in for a tough time. You see, There was a difficulty between the parent and teacher relationship. The parent was rather selfish for their child. We see it also with employees and employers. We've had experience of that on the farm just this past week, having to take an employee to one side and say, you've got to pull your socks up. You've got a responsibility here, not just simply to do as you're told, but you put your heart into it. So often as employees, and I've been there, the employer just seems to have got it all wrong and we could teach him or her a thing or two about doing it properly. And there's the customer. Before that, there's the child parent. There's a big one. I spoke a few weeks ago about this at Mickfield, and we have a lot of young families and a few teenagers. And I said, sometimes you teenagers give your mums and dads a tough, tough time. Because you're convinced you know better than what they do. But then there is also the customer and provider. And the reason I say that is because sometimes people view the church as a provider. And they see themselves as customers of that provider. And that's not the case at all. Some people come along to church and they expect to be catered for. They expect the message to be just right. They expect the music to be just right. They expect everything to be to their liking. And if it's not to their liking, then they go elsewhere. And some of them hop from place to place and they'll stay a little while here and move elsewhere. The church is a family. In a family, there are family responsibilities. We have a responsibility for one another. I'm always struck by Jesus' high priestly prayer. When he got to the last bit and he was praying for those who would believe through the testimony of the disciples, in other words, when he was praying for us, he prayed that they may be one that the world may know. And if the devil can come into a church and bring division, and if he can create dissatisfaction in people's lives so that they're grumbling about the pastor and about the church leadership and about all kinds of other things, so that there's friction in the church, that church is no longer unified. There is no longer a love. There's no longer a family in that church. And the witness is destroyed altogether. I believe with all of my heart that one of the most, if not the most powerful witness the world, the church, a local church, has in its community is the love that they have for one another. Once a year we have a harvest barn dance in our barn on the farm. We have a hog roast and a couple of hundred people come along to it. We try to have a message. In reality it's really, really hard because nobody's sort of listening and it all seems a little bit chaotic and so on. But invariably what people say afterwards to their friends who invited them, "I'm amazed by how loving you guys are towards one another and how openly you welcomed us." When there's that friction, which is caused by selfishness, which we see from these people, and indeed from the disciples, then that love for one another isn't there. The unity isn't there. And the church is no longer really effective in its witness to the community. But then there's another application. We need to see the need beyond unreasonable attitudes. The people's attitude towards Jesus and the disciples was unreasonable. There is no question about that at all. They didn't respect their need for privacy, for quiet. They didn't come prepared. They were just simply unreasonable in their attitude. Jesus saw beyond that. He saw them not as a bunch of irresponsible, grumbling people. He saw them as sheep without a shepherd. My dad used to look after sheep and he told me several stories of what they're like. And he told me, if you ever buy any sheep, you need to put them into your neighbour's field so that they end up in yours, because they never stay where they should do. Jesus saw these people as sheep without a shepherd. Do we see that? Those around us, the world we often talk about, don't we? Those who haven't come to a saving knowledge of Jesus, who haven't met him, who don't delight in him, they give Christians a hard time. Jesus told us that would be the case. He said, they hated me, they're going to hate you. That's the reality. That's the way it's going to be. But Jesus wants us to see beyond that. Jesus has made himself known to us by his Spirit. As I was saying this morning, what a blessed position we're in. In that passage we read this morning, Paul goes on to talk about the secret wisdom of God. And he said, we haven't received the Spirit of the world, but we've received the Spirit of God so that we may freely know what God has given to us. That's the position we're in. We understand this remarkable, life-changing gospel. We've experienced its power in our lives. We delight ourselves in the freedom and joy and peace we have. And yet we look on those around us, sometimes disdainfully. How dare they treat me? I'm a good person. How dare they treat me like that? Instead of looking beyond and having compassion, just as Jesus had compassion towards us. And then another application is the need to act in faith. You remember when Jesus said to his disciples, "You feed them." They said, "Can't be done." What Jesus wanted them to say, "Jesus, we believe that you can do it. We'll do it if you make it happen. We're looking to you." What a wonderful miracle. Well, the miracle they did see anyway. How we need to act in faith. The task to which God has called us as being ambassadors, delegates, as Jesus sent these out, we're delegates, is so great, beyond any of us in reality. We have to constantly come and say, "I need your help. I need your enabling. I can only do this by trusting you. I must put my faith in you." And then as I close, just think about Jesus' compassion towards us. I've talked about that several times. But how easy it is to forget, isn't it? How easy it is to not remember what great sinners we are. And what a great salvation Jesus has towards us. We should constantly marvel at the fact that God, in his infinite grace towards us, has dealt with our sin. Not because we've achieved some level of performance or some standard demanded by him, but because he loves us. And because in his grace he's taken our sin and laid it on his son. And Jesus has borne the punishment for our sin. He's shown us such compassion. We need to preach the gospel to ourselves again and again and again. Because as we do so, we have greater compassion on those around us. We delight ourselves in the privilege of sharing the gospel with them. So with God's help, may he equip us each one this next week to do acts of service, to serve him for the sake of the gospel, preaching the gospel as we thought this morning, but out of our heart of compassion that God has given us for those around us. Amen.